Welcome back to Radio Wasteland. Later on tonight for you, we have our guest Jonathan Weiss returning as we talk about crazy, mysterious, and infamous women of... Oh my gosh, what's that place with all the vampires?
New Orleans?
Narlands, yeah, Narlands, yeah. But in the meantime, I'm your host, Chauncey Hallworth. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick.
Hello.
Kara, do you have any news for us today?
Yes, I do. So on the Late Late Show, Barack Obama appeared to confirm the truth behind some aspects of UFO sightings last week, saying, quote, "The truth is when I came into office, I asked. I said, is there a lab somewhere where we're keeping the alien specimens and spaceships? The answer was no. But what is true, and I'm being serious here, is that there's footage and records of objects in the skies, and we don't know exactly what they are. We can't explain how they moved, their trajectory. They did not have an easily explainable pattern." On a different interview last week, Navy pilot Ryan Graves said in an interview with CBS 60 Minutes that he and his Navy colleagues witnessed UAPs, quote, "every day for at least a couple years." He has told this story before, describing how the objects could reach 30,000 feet in hypersonic speeds, yet produced no visible or infrared exhaust. Yet an interview with 60 Minutes shows that mainstream news outlets are scrambling to get information on the UFO phenomenon, as the congressional report is only weeks away. In related news, the FBI has started an investigation into an incident that occurred in February, where a Border Patrol helicopter almost collided with a, quote, "heavily modified drone that could reach up to 14,000 feet, something beyond the capabilities of ordinary civilian drones. They followed the drone, but it managed to evade them. This incident occurred near Tucson, Arizona, where sightings of strange drones, whether cartel or U.S. military, have been recorded for years. And unrelated to all of that, two bottles of Petrus 2000 wine that spent a year in space are expected to sell for $1 million each at auction. These bottles are said to have developed a unique flavor profile while floating in the International Space Station. The proceeds of this auction will go to fund further space exploration. Back to you, Chauncey.
Okay, so, you know, a couple of years back, even when we first started doing this and up until before, this whole discussion of disclosure and getting to disclosure, at the time I was listening to tons of Richard Hoagland.
Sure.
And, I really loved this, what I considered at the time to be fantasy idea of us coming up on a government disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say now that, you know, it is a possibility. I'm seeing this as a possibility with all the more and more higher profile people coming out and talking about it. And yeah. It just, if it ends up being that we actually find something out of concrete value, I got to say this world's a lot better off than I thought we were. if we really for three decades could basically just as a people bitch and complain to the point where the biggest secret in possibly all of human history was given out to us in about 30, 40, 50 years from just bitching and complaining, we live in a pretty good society.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's, you know, lots of other possibilities, right? You know, it's not aliens or...
Of course you think there are other possibilities than us living in a good society.
Well, I just hate it when people are happy and optimistic about the future.
Totally.
Just try to clamp down on that when I can, because I was sent by the devil to destroy humanity.
I'm helping you from your own misery, Chauncey, in the future. It's better to just be unhappy now than broken in the future.
Exactly. So, I don't know. I think this is pretty crazy coming from the perspective of someone who was doing these shows in, like, 2017, right? And talking to all these UFO guys, and it's like, yeah, okay, whatever. Disclosure is never going to happen. And, you know, this does not meet the definition of disclosure or whatever with a capital D, but it's way more than I ever thought would happen. Like,
yeah, it just brings it into the realm of possibility. Where
it really does.
Yeah.
So, and I still don't know what to make of any of this. It's worth noting that none of these agencies are saying, you know, it's aliens yet, but they are saying, like, they aren't offering any alternative explanation, really. like they're saying, you know, maybe it's some other country, but that as an explanation makes very little sense.
So I think it's Wakandans. I'm into it.
It could be Wakandans.
I would be prouder if it was Wakandans, you know,
if
frankly.
If it was Wakandans, that would be better than aliens.
Right, because we'd be all, thank God, it was us this whole time, you know, it was other humans, you know, we're able to do this. But if it's aliens, you know, we're going to get stomped under the boot.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. If it's aliens, they've been here for, you know, decades and decades and have done literally nothing, really.
Apart from, they've taken people and probed them.
Yeah.
And melon ball scooped their skin and stuff.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, if it's aliens, I don't think our life is going to change all that much.
Yeah.
I think it'll be crazy, but, like, if... What does it matter if it's aliens if you can't talk to them or look at their stuff, you know, if you can't... if it's just going to indefinitely remain in the realm of... We saw this crazy object, but it was, you know, 40 miles away in the sky, and it vanished after 14 seconds.
Yeah,
you know,
well, maybe they're here for blue jeans and McDonald's, and it'll tear down the wall just like Russia.
Yeah, we can only hope.
Before moving on, though, I do have to throw in that I realize that if it does end up being the Wakandans, first thing that I want asked at the news interview is, so why the anal probing? If you are other humans, why is this going on? All right. The border
helicopter. Oh, that wasn't us. We don't know who it was.
The border helicopter, I can straight up tell you, is not aliens. It's got to be cartels, coyotes, smugglers trying to figure out ways to get over the border silently.
Yeah, but that's also near, like, a bunch of military bases. So, like, a drone able to reach those heights would be a pretty crazy drone. So... But then again, these cartels are, you know, big organizations.
Well, I guess it could be other countries doing spy missions.
Yeah, exactly. See, this is why I think it's interesting, because this is exactly the type of sighting that would get reported as UFO sightings if it wasn't, if they haven't, like, seen the drone up close, you know? So, it's odd. Maybe there is, you know, more advanced drone technology out there, but this is still a far cry from, like, the stuff capabilities displayed by, like, the Tic Tac UFO.
Right. And then finally, two bottles of space wine.
Space wine.
Yeah, that makes me think of, like, the best sequel to Sideways. You know, somewhere between Sideways and The Thing, we'll get Paul Giamatti back, Thomas Hayden Church. Sandra Oh, and I forget who the other girl was that was in it. Virginia Madsen, maybe. Yeah, great sequel. Great sequel right there. Somewhere between Jake Gyllenhaal in that Life movie and Sideways.
So is this going to be like the wine of the alien parasites or whatever?
Yeah, who wants space wine? Why do you want that? What are you going to do with it?
I don't know.
That just proves we're Morlocks, Kara, and those are Eloy. The only people who would want space wine are Eloy, because they want it for whole reasons that have nothing to do with anything that we could comprehend.
Elon Musk? More like Eloy Musk.
Yeah, Eloy Musk, totally. Did you see him on SNL?
No.
It was awkward.
Yeah.
To say the least.
I can only imagine.
All right, coming up next here, we're talking about Haunted New Orleans with Jonathan Weiss. This is his second time on the show. First time it was a broad spectrum. This time we're talking about the ladies. And there's a lot of history, man. The Street Gang one. Street Gang one is interesting. So come on back if you're listening to Radio Wasteland.
Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come. 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military.
I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right?
So I reached out and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to MakeTheConnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/Radio Wasteland.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland. That welcome back is both to you, the audience, and to our guest tonight, Jonathan Weiss, Vice. Of Jonathan Vice Tours. We're talking, you know, we had Jonathan on not too long ago. We were talking about New Orleans, and I know I don't say, but, okay, so. This is a constant thing that goes on TV. Let me back up. Tonight we're talking about women in New Orleans. But I got to say, this is a constant thing that goes on. How does somebody from New Orleans pronounce it? And how does somebody who's not from New Orleans, how are they supposed to pronounce it?
There's different pronunciations depending on what part of the city you're from.
I see.
Generally, it's going to be New Orleans, N-O-R-L-I-N-S, or New Orleans, which is closest to the original French, or New Orleans, almost like N-E-W with a little apostrophe O-R-L-I-N-S. Those are the three major pronunciations of the city's name.
Huh.
If you say New Orleans, we want to smack you immediately.
New Orleans?
New Orleans. Come on, you out of New Orleans. That makes us crazy. Yeah, we have all kinds of verbal tricks and cues to tell people, or tell if people are actually from New Orleans or not. From the way we pronounce our streets to the words we use to describe common events, there's tons and tons of verbal little tricks all throughout our specific version of Southern American English. Well, so it's kind of fun.
It makes me think a lot of England, how they can tell, like, which parts of London you're from based off of your accent.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently that's
by,
a really
by the way you pronounce words, yeah.
Yeah.
By the turns of phrase you use. It's really kind of cool because you're right, London's homogenized a lot. Since the like, 80s, but New Orleans still has its very specific little things. I'm kind of pleased by that.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, it's cool because it holds on to the history. And, you know, speaking of the history and the little things, you know, when I saw this topic, I couldn't help but to think the first thing that popped into my head was in a history where women have been, well, without a doubt, the most marginalized group throughout all of history would be women. New Orleans seems to have this underbelly, this underground, and I can't help but to think that that was like a festering, maybe festering's not the right word, but an area for women to do things that maybe they weren't able to do in other parts of the world because of this sort of secretive underground.
I wouldn't necessarily say it's secretive as much as it's just a completely different cultural point of view than the rest of the United States, or the rest of what became the United States. And it had very much to do with, I think it had a lot to do with the fact that we were such a raw frontier for so long. There were not enough women here by any means. When we got founded, there were just not any women. So literally, you know, there were schemes to trick, entice, and import women from France to the savage new world, including these amazingly detailed fake posters about what they could expect when they arrived in this beautiful paradise called La Nouvelle Lyon.
Oh, no.
Oh my God, it was fantastic. I've seen a reproduction of one of the posters, and it genuinely shows you a complete fantasy. Because in the 1730s, New Orleans, you know, we're mostly below sea level in southern Louisiana. New Orleans didn't have any paving in the streets until 1888. So essentially the streets were open sewers. The houses were made from busted up boats and barges. So the planks didn't fit right. You know, you chinked them with mud and moss. The floors were generally made of dirt. And the roofs were made of wood shingles. But when it rains heavily, like it does in southern Louisiana, the wood shingles would essentially just sift the water evenly over the entire floor of your house, leaving a mud pit surrounded by a wooden shack. It was an absolute festering pit, and the men of the time would look a lot like the extras from the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Right.
So the poster is just an absolute fantasy creation that shows beautiful cobblestone streets and stately two-story townhomes as far as you can see. In the foreground, two gentlemen. Now this would be the late Three Musketeer time, so these men would be fancy. With the long curling wigs and the high buckle shoes, frock coats. These men have their arms linked, and they're strolling the boulevard of a fictitious city, looking at the viewer with the most French face you could ever imagine. And the best of all, in the background, the snow-capped mountains of southern Louisiana rose up to kiss the sky.
Oh, God.
Yes. Snow-capped mountains, southern Louisiana. There was not an innocent word in that whole sentence.
Yeah.
So I guess that is the beginning of the rebelliousness of women when they showed up. I can imagine that they showed up and they were all, oh, hell no.
Yeah, our first women actually were from the prisons of France.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So they emptied the prisons out. They emptied the prisons of pickpockets, the homeless, mentally ill. They emptied the prisons, of course, of prostitutes, and they all sent them here to be wives. A city of prostitutes being poured into a city of savages to be good wives. Can you imagine how well that went?
Yes, I can. It sounds like a lot of, it sounds like post-apocalyptic movies that I would like, you know, it sounds like some sort of like Mad Max, premise, you know.
I don't think that would be too bad of a comparison, to be very honest with you.
All right. So, you know, when we had you on the first time, we talked a bit about Marie Laveau, and let's skim over her real quick for anybody who hasn't seen her, but we'll talk about some of the other ones as well. But
sure.
Marie Laveau, I think, is probably the most famous name that's coming out of there when we sort of think of scary
New Orleans, yeah.
New Orleans and women. Is she worthy of this sort of scary title that comes with her?
I think so. I mean, she would have wielded an immense amount of power for a woman in the 19th century, mid-19th century, let alone a black woman in the mid-19th century. Mm-hmm. She was an extremely astute businesswoman. She was a hairdresser by trade, and she also was essentially, you know, recognized voodoo priestess. In New Orleans, the voodoo priestesses were all referred to as queens, right? Mm-hmm. The thing is, though, imagine the high society ladies of New Orleans who have their hairdresser over for their little, you know, get-togethers. It's going to be Marie Laveau, and they find out that she's a queen of voodoo. Oh, Lord. This is so exciting. She's a queen. She's royalty. Mm. So she really knew how to work the expectations of the white people around her, the high society around her. Of course, she was raised in this milieu, so she understood people intimately. And I think that she was not only a very clever, very strong marketer of her own brand. I mean, literally, she was her own brand. But she's also a very well-respected priestess of voodoo. And she was feared, no doubt at all. The white population feared her, the black population feared her, because they did not want to risk her displeasure. So she was extremely powerful and extremely influential in a time where women and black women were essentially non-entities, or I guess considered not quite citizens or not quite even human. Right. So she was, I think, a very interesting and powerful character. But we do actually have something of a tradition of very strong free black women in New Orleans. That's not a joke at all. I mean, you know, those stories like John Bunyan and Pecosville, you know, these legendary kind of tall tale characters of early America, Johnny Appleseed. There's one here named Annie Christmas. Annie Christmas was a free black woman who was almost 7 feet tall and could carry a barrel of flour under each arm and one on her head. She could load a flatboat all by herself in a single day. We said that she was so strong. She was so tough and strong. She dressed like a man, but she wore a pearl necklace around her neck. But each pearl represented some man that she'd beaten down. Huh. So yeah, and this is a pre-Civil War character up and down the Mississippi River, talked about amongst slaves and free blacks alike as being, you know, essentially a patroness, a giantess in her own time. A woman who did not need a man, but a woman who's as strong as a man, but a woman who bore, I think they said, 12 sons, each one bigger and stronger than the last one. So, I mean, it's such a shame that characters like that are kind of faded away in our consciousness.
Right.
But, I mean, that's a wonderful legendary character. That's a free black woman who runs her own business. She was a keelboat captain on the Mississippi River. And I think that's just one of the coolest stories that nobody really knows about. So we do have a tradition of strong free black women. Mother Henriette Delisle was another free black woman, descended from the Creole class. That means she'd be descended of the French and Spanish original settlers of the area. Mm-hmm. But she was also, I think, 1/8 African. So she'd been certainly noted as a black woman in birth records, even though she was free. But she founded the first order of nuns. The first black American woman to found an order of nuns in the 19th century. And she was very influential in education. She ministered to the poor. She taught slaves and free blacks how to read from children to adults, taught them literacy and numbers. She was very much a rebel for her time, because I haven't been able to get a whole lot of information about it, but her class, she would be considered to be born to a class of women called blessées. Placé comes from the French word, which literally means to be in a place. So placés would literally be kept women, women of a place. Uh-huh. And these were the free black mistresses of the white clails of New Orleans. So that was like a class, like a geisha class. Your daughter is raised up by a placé to be a placé, to learn how to dress, how to do her makeup discreetly, how to run a household, how to converse, how to be polite to society, because she's destined to become a companion of a wealthy French or Spanish gentleman. And she was very much rebellious in that class and time. She demanded on joining holy orders, and she finally did it at the age of 21.
It's the Ramsey Show, where we talk about your life and your money. Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Root.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
You don't have to be a Native American to access quality health care. Radiant Rancheria's Churn Creek Healthcare and Central Valley Healthcare are open to anyone with Medicare, Medi-Cal, or Partnership Health. Our health system never charges co-pays, deductibles, share of costs, or even a sliding fee scale. Patients never have to pay to access quality, compassionate health care. Radiant Rancheria Tribal Health System, changing how health care is delivered. Call us today to schedule an appointment.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier in all we do.
Premier Oil Change has been locally owned and operated since we opened in 2006, enjoying long-term relationships with our team members and loyal guests. Many of our team members have worked with us for over 10 years. Many of our certified technicians have logged over 30,000 oil changes, working on hundreds of different vehicle makes and models. In an ever-changing world, we strive to keep up with change with our extensive training program. It's important to the staff at Premier Oil Change that our customers' cars are well taken care of by experienced, well-trained technicians. So you can depend on your vehicle to get you and your family to your destination. Don't forget that you can earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com or visit us in Palo Cedro. Premier is in the Holiday Market Shopping Center or in Redding on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park or our newest location in Anderson across from Roundtable. Remember, you get a free car wash with every oil change. Premier Oil Change, home of the friendly oil change.
Hi, I'm Arielle Winter. If you're anything like me, your pets are not only your best friends, they're part of your family. American Humane, which has been rescuing animals like Cleo here for more than 100 years, has life-saving tips that can make a big difference in a disaster. When disaster strikes, you want to protect your whole family, including your pets. To help keep your family safe and help our best friends in their worst times, find tips at AmericanHumane.org.
You're listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us.
We have such a specific pocket of culture here. You know, the United States is so big and we kind of think of ourselves as one big country, although here recently we seem to be thinking otherwise as two different countries. But, you know, I think about it with a comparison to Europe. And, you know, like I grew up in Southern California, then I moved to Northern California. And the distance to do that is like traveling through three countries in Europe, three very drastic, different cultures, you know, and I don't think the United States gets its, we seem to be in between, is a state a country with its own culture, and are we the United States? Are we this sort of globalized view of, hey, we're all this way? You know, it's very interesting that New Orleans seems to have very well held on to its pocket of culture in a world that's trying to take that away.
Well, I mean, you know, the joke that's not a joke is that we've been at war with America for more than 200 years. Because we didn't want to be Americans. The French and Spanish were absolutely appalled to become Americans. They hated Americans so much, they were not even allowed in our homes. And we wouldn't sell them a single inch of ground in the city of New Orleans, which essentially was the French Quarter. So they actually had to buy a plantation across what is now Canal Street and build their own settlement. So generally, Canal Street was a dividing line between the Creoles, the Europeans, and the Americans. Mm. And the little strip of ground that goes between two lanes of a street that you call the median. In New Orleans, it's to this day called the neutral ground. Because that's where the French and American businessmen would meet to conduct business. They had to do business with each other, but they didn't like each other. So they just met in the neutral ground. And to this day, the median in the rest of the United States is called a neutral ground in New Orleans, all over the city.
Is there any of that left?
Oh, yeah. Uptowners and downtowners really honestly don't mix and don't get along very well. They don't trust each other very much.
Interesting. Yeah, that is wild.
Too, because when downtowners go uptown, they can always spot somebody from downtown. It's just, I guess we're a little more overt, a little less American, a little more flamboyant, a little louder, a little more cheerful. I think we probably tip better, too.
Right. Oh, that's good.
But, yeah, it's still very much a divided city. Even
more attractive.
All these years later. Well, at that moment, obviously. I didn't want to go. Thank you, Karen. Did you have a question about anything about the women?
Yeah. So, you know, on your tour, you know, how many women do people hear about on your tour?
It really kind of depends. There's just generally, it's a blessing. There are so many amazing and interesting women in New Orleans history in 300 years. Mm-hmm. And so many we don't know about, which drives me crazy. You know, every once in a while I will find one and I'm like, oh my God, this woman is the coolest woman in the history world. But it just kind of depends. I mean, you know, I think I mentioned before, my tours generally have to do with time and route. So I will put as many stories as I can, to be honest with you. That's why I encourage people to ask me questions, because the more questions you ask like this, you know, I can just kind of freestyle it, if you will.
Exactly.
Right.
And I can answer specific questions or give people a better contextual grip on a culture, time, place, or person. So it's, you know, as many as I could talk about. I could easily put a dozen women into a tour. I could put many more than that. It kind of depends, just like I said, on time. And also, I think, what my group is interested in.
Right.
We've got everything from generally murderous prostitutes in our city to fantastic folklore characters like Annie Christmas to genuinely powerful women, temporally powerful women like Marie Laveau, to absolute savage psychopaths like Delphine Lavallée, to sainted mothers like Mother Anne Vélie. So, I mean, it's just, it's everything, man. It's a gamut. And this, keep in mind, this would all be in the 1 mile by 1/2 mile.
Right.
Yeah. It's crazy, but it's absolutely just one of the most amazing things to realize how many women. Oh, and I didn't mention the Baroness Portalva. If you go to New Orleans, if you look at pictures of New Orleans, you're almost always going to see the same picture. That's the picture of Jackson Square with the cathedral. And Andrew Jackson waving his hat in the air as he, you know, salutes his troops for victory over the British at the Battle of New Orleans. That square was actually designed and paid for by a woman.
Oh.
How?
In the 1850s.
Yeah, how? You know, how is she able to do that at the time?
She was extremely rich and extremely powerful and from a very old, literally Spanish-French nobility line. So that carried a ton of weight in New Orleans, right? Because she's Creole as Creole can be, right? Her name was Berenice Micaela Amores de Putalba. And if you look at the beautiful red brick buildings on either side of Jackson Square, and you look at the Spanish lace, you know, the little ironwork on the galleries, you're going to see the letters A and P intertwined in all those galleries because Amores de Putalba, her last name's initials, and she designed them. She paid to have them built. She worked with the architects. She bought up all the one-story shanty, crappy shacks that would have been around Jackson Square originally, knocked them all down, and had those gorgeous buildings built around 1851. And you know, she was such an interesting and powerful woman. There was actually an opera written about her, which debuted in New Orleans about 10 years ago, called Puntal. No, called Micaela. And yeah, she's just absolutely mind-blower. Even Andrew Jackson, his statue, she's the one who essentially designed and kind of put the most influence into the design of the statue. You'll see Andrew Jackson with his hat off, right? Now, this may not be true. It's a traditional New Orleans apocryphal story, but it's said that when Andrew Jackson was here to defend the city against the British in 1815, young Baroness Micaela is riding along in her carriage. And apparently General Jackson was busy or just probably thinking about how do I save the city from the British. He didn't notice her and he didn't tip his hat. And that somewhat infuriated the young lady. And allegedly she held a grudge for 4 decades. So when she had that statue designed, he's designed with his hat off, clearly, so he'll forever be tipping his hat to the Baroness.
That is funny.
It's probably not true.
Yeah.
But honestly, given her character, it could be true.
Right. It's one of those things we'll file it as true. Because we just want it. Because
you want it to be true.
Right.
Because it's awesome.
Right.
Yeah, I was about to ask about, like, her personality, and it sounds like she was imperious and willful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The truth is, she was forced into a marriage with her cousin. She's of Spanish extraction, he's of French, literally of France. Mm-hmm. But she was a bossy woman. She was a headstrong woman, and he was kind of a weak-willed guy, so she just ran the roost. She told him what to do, literally ran his life for him.
Like my house.
His father was a very strong-willed man and traditionally was used to running his son's life for him, too. So, of course, they clashed. They butted heads. They went to visit his father's estates in France, and his father hated her so much that he came into the house he was letting me use with 4 pistols, shot her 3 times, and then when she lays on the floor bleeding, he pulled out a pistol and essentially atone for the scandal by shooting himself. Here's the joke. She survived.
Amazing.
Yeah. Perfect. Imperious and strong-willed, exactly who she was.
That is a lot like my house. Shot my wife through. No. I, however, on the flip side, I appreciate my wife running my life because I think I would starve and die of exposure without her,
You'd starve in a nest of filthy clothes otherwise.
I would, yeah. I was not hugely competent. Okay, so earlier you hit a note that Kara and I can only imagine we're both interested in, and that's murderous prostitutes.
Yes, please.
You know,
dude, I knew that would get you.
I want to know about the savage psychopaths.
Wait, savage psychopath was a different category.
We'll hit
and savage psychopath, you know?
Yeah, subdivisions. I feel like there's some overlap.
I'm sure there's some overlap. But let's go to murderous prostitutes, because I can imagine that, especially when you tell us the origin and them dumping the people here, you know,
I would kill people.
How's a woman get by?
You can't fault someone for a little murder under those circumstances.
Well, you know, obviously a lot of the women who were imported here went back to the trade. A lot of them did become wives, you know, because it's not the dream of every little girl to become a prostitute, obviously.
Of course.
And historically in New Orleans, we have, I'm sure everybody is aware New Orleans has a reputation historically of being the Babylon, the pit of sin and vice. Mm-hmm. Always has been. And as a result, you know, there was a never-ending supply of prostitutes in New Orleans for centuries. The last open house of prostitution in New Orleans was, I'm going to think, 1972.
Holy shit.
I mean, technically it wasn't open, but, you know, everybody knew about it, and the cops got paid off. Mm-hmm. That's how it works, right?
Right.
So the prostitutes in New Orleans, though, were, you know, most of their stories are gone in time. There's a wonderful photographer named Ernest Belloc, who lived in New Orleans in the late 19th century, and he took pictures of the prostitute of Storyville. Storyville was our red light district. And only about 10 or 12 of his photographs survived because his brother was a Catholic priest and destroyed almost all the photographs after his death.
Figures.
But a few of them survived, and they are literally iconic photographs. So, you know, we can see these ladies in some cases. We can see pictures of some of the ladies. We have lots of descriptions. Of course, we have, you know, records. You would have to buy a license to run a house of prostitution. So we know who and where and when and where they were located in the city. So we have a lot of information in that respect. We also have a lot of stories that come down, like a lot of good stories in the South, through word of mouth, through diaries, journals, letters, things like that from the past. But it was extremely, extremely difficult, extremely dangerous. I think most of the prostitutes in New Orleans probably died before they were 50. From disease and violence.
Right, that's what I was
drug use,
say.
Disease and violence. I mean, there's just not a way to understand how dangerous New Orleans would have been historically. But you got to realize it is one of the biggest transient points in North America, and there's a big 200-foot deep river right next to it. So
that goes right out to the sea.
Yeah, the violence would have been absolutely off the scale in some areas of the city. I mean, beyond our willingness to comprehend. If you ever saw the movie Gangs in New York, it would be that level of squalor and violence.
Powerhouse Solar is looking for an experienced electrician, 10 years experience preferred, full-time, with benefits, retirement, and competitive pay. This is a family-owned company that provides a relaxed, pleasant work environment. Qualified candidates can apply in person at Powerhouse Solar on Caterpillar Road or email resumes to info@powerhousesolar.com.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
30 years ago, Simpson University arrived in Redding with a promise to serve the North State. Warmly welcomed by this far Northern California community, we forged lasting partnerships, serving our neighbors locally as well as globally. Building on our promise, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Our promise to be the gateway to world service begins in our backyard. Learn more about Redding's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Filato, broker and co-owner of The Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at estategranite.com.
These are unprecedented times, challenging how the YMCA works to strengthen community as we have for nearly 170 years. But we've always found ways to help people and communities in times of crisis. Right now, Ys across the country are providing emergency child care, shelter, food programs, and outreach to seniors. But we can't do it alone. Whether you're connected to the Y or have a fond Y memory, we need you to stay with us. Reach out to your local Y today and stay with us for a better us.
Powerhouse Solar is looking for an experienced electrician, 10 years experience preferred, full-time, with benefits, retirement, and competitive pay. This is a family-owned company that provides a relaxed, pleasant work environment. Qualified candidates can apply in person at Powerhouse Solar on Caterpillar Road or email resumes to info@powerhousesolar.com.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
She's one of the most infamous women of the city of New Orleans and absolutely shaped our culture from 1834 on, because she's been one of the most persistent boogeymen, if you will, boogie women, and ghost stories of the city of New Orleans since, you know, 1830s. So, and that's the one everybody knows about because of American Horror Story and stuff like that. I'm hoping to be able to talk to her about her in a historical context. Maybe hopefully trying to figure out why she was this way. I hope. And give people a little more idea of what this person was. She would have had every single advantage possible to a woman for that time period. I think she and her husband were arguably, if not the richest people in a third of North America, right up there in the top five. Incalculable wealth and power for the time. I suspect her family knew about her proclivities.
It's hard to hide when you're in the house.
Well, I mean her extended family.
I see.
I suspect she might have also been extremely frightening and abusive to her daughters. Because her daughters, who should have been awful little monsters, being spoiled and rich, were apparently notoriously shy and retiring and quiet. Mm-hmm. So I think she was literally an ogress, just running a household with absolutely no restraint. And she was like a wicked witch from Hansel and Gretel, almost, you know?
Right.
A woman with very, very few redeeming qualities. But you know what I find so interesting about that is you got to realize that Marie Laveau and Delphine Larrie would have absolutely known who each other were. They would have gone to the same cathedral for mass together. It's not unlikely that Marie Laveau did Delphine Larrie's hair on more than one occasion because she's a hairdresser to the high society ladies.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just crazy to think about these women. One who essentially is a powerful, if you will, almost voodoo saint. And another one who is absolutely and utterly dark. Not only knowing each other, but crossing paths repeatedly. And going to the same cathedral for mass together.
So I guess I didn't make the connection that they would be alive at the same time. Was this...
Absolutely.
Was this a golden age of history in New Orleans for both of them to be alive at the same time? Is this an era that we draw a lot of history from, or is that purely coincidental?
No, and you're right. It's an era we draw a lot of history from. The increased Americanization of New Orleans after 1803, and also the explosion of traffic on the Mississippi River, would have made us an absolute focal point for anybody traveling from Europe to North America is almost without exception going to go to New Orleans. Reporters, you know, all kinds of, we had multiple newspapers in several different languages. So, there's increased literacy at the time period. So people are able to keep their own journals and diaries and write letters more often. So that's really the golden era for history because we get so much good history from that time period. At the same time, it's so far removed. It's a little bit hazy, if you will, in our mind's eye. So it's a lot of fun to kind of try and put these people together. At the same time, I suspect that Marie Laveau, Delphine Larrie, the Pirate King Jean Lafitte, and Andrew Jackson were all at the same church together at the same time.
Hmm.
They were four very notorious characters of the city's history.
Right.
It's very likely they would all sit at the same cathedral at the same time together.
Man, that's a movie right there, too.
Yep. New Orleans is nothing but the most amazing series of movies and TV shows.
Yeah.
That nobody ever makes.
Yeah.
Well, you're the holder of the knowledge. Why aren't you making these movies?
Hollywood, if you need somebody to consult, I've done it before.
Yeah, all the Netflix execs who listen to our show, please.
And there's tons of them, I'm sure.
Find Jonathan Weiss.
Totally. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
He's available to consult.
Biggest damn show on the internet.
Yeah, you know, it really is neat because I would have thought something like a little more daring company like HBO.
Yeah, exactly.
It just seems like such a natural to set a historical drama in New Orleans.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Because you would have the glittering high society, you know, pre-antebellum, pre-Civil War, glittering high society, and absolute squalor, who would literally live a block and a half apart from each other.
Right. And racism abound, undergrounds where women and black characters can thrive. Just great opportunity there. Great
and also the mixing of races, like I said, a class mixing of races.
Yeah.
We had extremely violent street gangs in the city. I mean, savage Irish street gangs like would come out of the Five Points, right? You got Bridget Fury and Bricktop Mary and their little cabal of extremely violent prostitutes, who the first female street gang, right?
That's the one I want to see the most. That's the movie we've got.
I think it'd be fascinating, wouldn't it? It really would be cool. It would be like Deadwood, just set about 40 years earlier.
Really
that'd be one hell of a show, wouldn't it?
Just like Fargo, but set in New Orleans.
Yeah.
A comedy of errors kind of thing. You know, unbelievable.
It's one of the coolest things about the city is the things, I think I mentioned to you before, but the things that actually happened, if you read it in a movie, or if you read it in a book or saw it in a movie, you wouldn't believe it. But it really happened. We know it happened. Yeah. It's just absolutely impossible to wrap your head around the sheer improbability of the city. And yet, the fact that it's not only thrived, but has been tried to be. If we feel like the gods try to wipe us off the map for 300 years, and yet we just won't go.
Right.
And I would suggest, I always said, you know, kind of tongue in cheek, it's like, because nobody else would let us in. That's what it is.
Right.
We built our own little strange insular community that's got our own very specific rules and culture. And it's just its own little place.
So, I would like to see Mardi Gras spread across the country, though. That is a holiday I'd like to see the rest of the country celebrate.
And the sad thing is it won't work because the rest of the country is Protestant.
They're what?
I guess so.
Protestants.
Oh.
Mardi Gras is a Catholic holiday.
Yeah.
It literally is based on old Catholic principles, you know, we'll call it Catholic beginning of the Lenten season with Ash Wednesday, the day after Mardi Gras.
We do Halloween. So, I mean, nobody cares about that.
Yeah, I don't think
that.
Americans have a huge problem with taking holidays without
and
know,
butchering
any
them.
Understanding of their historical or religious context.
Yeah, what
Patrick's Day? What?
Yeah, what Mardi Gras needs is like its own Santa Claus figure from Macy's in order to sell presents.
Oh my God.
Some sort of like giant cake with a baby in it or something. You
know? Chelsea, I want you to keep your dirty American hands off. Yeah. If you want to have a Mardi Gras, you have it in your house or you come and visit us. But that's the only way you do it. We don't allow any other Mardi Gras.
We'll talk about this in the neutral zone. Was that the right word?
Neutral ground.
Yeah,
neutral ground. Right. Exactly right, man.
All right, yeah, well, we're at the end here. Really appreciate you coming on. Man, you always got the greatest stories, and there's just so much going on there. And I really appreciate you coming on, especially a second time. You've been listening to Jonathan Weiss here. We've been talking about Women of NOLA, that's New Orleans, Louisiana. And if you're interested in finding out more about him and his tours, your best place is to go to jonathanweisstours.com. Weiss is spelt with a W, like the German. And check it out. For one, it's a great-looking website, if nothing else. You got some great photography going on there.
Thank you.
SEO brain popping in.
Yeah.
I respect that, my friend.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for being on the show, and we're always happy to have you.
Dude, I have a great time every time I'm on. It's great to see you both and chat with you.
That's how it starts, son. We go back to your house. You check the charts, son. Try to figure it out. And if it's crowded, all the better. Cause we know we're gonna be a plane. But if you're worried about the weather, then you picked the wrong place to stay.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.